As we said, Dave's going to be speaking on steps 8 and 9. Those are made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all, and made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So, Dave.
Thank you, Greg.
It's all yours.
All right, my friend. Thank you very much.
All right.
A little more hesitation there than I was comfortable with. Hi. I'm used to our membership just waiting to clap, just hoping they could get to clap for somebody. So, you know, I showed up, I didn't want to. By the way, I'm Dave and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
I showed up at a, hey guys, at an AA meeting. Actually, the very first time I introduced myself, I was in a rehab. And I didn't know. I had never gone to an AA meeting because they don't want you to drink. And so I was avoiding that at all cost. And so I showed up, and after I was there, people were introducing themselves in this rehab, and they were saying, "I'm Joe and I'm an alcoholic," and "I'm Stella and I'm an alcoholic." And nobody named Stella was there. There's nobody named Stella anywhere, but anyway, Stella didn't say that, but I said that and they clapped because it was the very first time that I had said it, and I had no idea that they did that. And I'm telling you, I was pretty impressed with these people, knowing full well what my value really was. The fact that, and it turns out, it means nothing, they clap for everybody. So as I said, and I've said before, it's an honor and it's a privilege to be able to do this. And honestly, today I did my research. You know, I got right on top of it. I had a couple things to do in the morning, and somewhere around noon I thought, boy, I really ought to get on this. So I hustled right into it. I watched a couple things on Netflix, and then I had to get a haircut, and then I started studying. And I got to tell you, 8 and 9, you know, are not difficult to understand. They really and truly aren't. And I would tell you that 6 and 7 are completely different. We're constantly studying the ideas of what is part of 6 and 7. And 8 and 9 are pretty practical, straight ahead steps. And so I thought, well, I will go to the expert board. So I went to the legacy, of course. Where else would I go? And get some opinion. And so I got, and I listened to the birthday girl. And I listened to another fellow, both of whom have 42 years of continuous sobriety. And I thought, well, these people probably know. And honestly, they do. So you're not going to hear the same thing tonight. Unless I can remember verbatim exactly what was said. I will probably end up sounding more like Bruce up here tonight than he was coming. Yeah. And now Bruce will come on, you know, he'll now applaud. So thank you, Bruce. So anyway, in the book Drop the Rock, it's where I found it anyway, I'm sure it's other places too, where they have what the step is and what the virtue is. And in 8, it is brotherly love. And then in 9 is justice. Now, I'll be honest with you. I've read through 12 and 12, and I've read a myriad of things over the period of time I've been sober about what 8 and 9 really mean, but I really never saw it as brotherly love. I don't know. I'm making a list, which is pretty straightforward. Can I make a list or I can't make a list? But obviously the important part is that I have to have the willingness to do that. And that, like a lot of our steps, comes with prayer. And because I have to pray for willingness sometimes, that's not just, I have to pray to be willing. So in fact, it doesn't surprise me that that's a repeat of what we need to do when we get here. We have to be willing to do this. So I'm going to make a list, And I'm going to, I'm going to base it on what I did in the fourth step. I already have a whole list of people that I need to make amends to, right? Well, in my case, not many. But I did limit, I did find a lot of people that owed them to me. And that it really amounts to the same thing, right? I mean, I was wondering if I could get any money back or whether I could just straight up apologies from people. Turns out, that's not so much. And when I finally did the step that my sponsor told me that wasn't really what we were looking for. We're not looking for you to make a list of what people owe you. But because I was not completely sure of what I was supposed to do in any of the steps, when I did the fourth and fifth step, I did to the best of my ability and I didn't do them well. So when I first come to the eighth and ninth step, and I want to talk about the first time I went through this, I also didn't do that well. Because, in fact, a lot of the people that I owed amends to, I hadn't the foggiest clue that I owed them amends. I didn't. So it was easy to make my list. I had like three people on there that were family members. And at some point I went and said, hey, listen, I'm sorry about that. And then I finished step nine. But that wasn't, it didn't give me the kind of release and the feeling of elation that they kind of mention in the book about being free from this burden and wreckage of the past. It didn't provide me with that. So right away I thought the book was wrong. And like most people early in recovery, I thought, that first of all, you could distill the big book down into, probably 10, 15 pages. And, just hit the high spots after that. Just get some bullet points and you make a list, you say you're sorry, let's move on. And, so here we are. I'm not very good at this, so I'm back to square one. So I go through 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 again, 6 and 7, completely confused. But now I'm interested in really making amends and seeing what that really gets to me. So making the list and having the willingness to do it was brand new to me. So let's put aside the fact that like lots of people, the very first time I went through the steps was a more perfunctory thing that somebody said, you got to go through the steps. And I had no real idea what that meant, and I had no relief as a result of going through them. And by the way, when I got to the 12th one, I really wasn't willing to help anybody. So, all the way back to the end, I need to have a spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience. I have to be able to find a God. I have to know that I'm powerless. I have to know that there are three frogs on a log that are making a decision so that I could go. So I got those frogs out there, and now I can, now that I know that in the fourth step that I've leaped forward, I know that the decision I made was to do 4 through 9, or actually 4 through 12. But let's face it, what we're talking about is the action steps here, and these are the last two of those particular and practical steps. So I'm going to make a list of all people I've harmed. I have no idea what that means, and by the way, I know what harm means because I made the list, but I'm sure it's not complete. I'm absolutely sure it's not complete. But I'm not worried so much about this time. And all I'm really looking for is to do the best that I can, knowing full well at some point I'm going to reach back and I'm going to find a variety of other people that I owe greater or lesser amends to. And I'd like the idea that I become willing to do this and I make this list. But I had to have a different definition of amends too, and I didn't look it up because that would have required me to do that. But I listened to other people, and what I found out is that it depends on who you talk to, by the way, like a lot of things. Amends are not, as I thought, just thrown up there. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. I'll never do it again. Knowing full well that you're saying to somebody you've already done it again to. It was making people whole, and that made difference. That made a difference to me. It made a difference to me that not only was am I willing now, and I can take the very practical step of putting people down on a list, but now the amend that I'm going to make is going to be more than just saying I'm sorry. That it's going to be greater than that, because it has to be, because I've already done more harm than I ever anticipated. I'm like probably a lot of people in this room, but maybe not all. I thought my drinking hurt nobody but me. I had never once given consideration, even in the face of the harm that I was doing, did I ever think that I was actually doing enough harm to you that at some point I was going to have to say I was sorry. Now, I was very sorry some mornings, but it had really nothing to do with what I had done previously. I don't care, Jack. Okay, let's start at the beginning. I don't know where I was at, so let's just play on. All right, but let me change courses because I probably wasn't going to say anything all that intelligent anyway. But let's start with what they tell us in the what the Joe and Charlie tapes will show us. I've listened to those many, many times, and I'm still astounded that these guys, you know, they had a great little overlap. You know, they one would talk and the other would fill in, and they did a nice job. And both of them sound like they were from some hill in Arkansas that, you know, hadn't seen the light of day for years, and a bunch of moonshiners, and I liked them for it, you know, and it's a great story. But when Charlie's talking about what his sponsor told him, and he gave him the four columns, because Charlie was certain that there were people that he was never going to. So it was the now, I can make them now, and later, I can make them later, and the maybes and the nevers. Those were his columns. And that made sense to me. It really did. I didn't know that I had nevers. I didn't know. Turns out I had a couple, but I didn't know in the early part of my recovery, or even mid-recovery, did I know that I had nevers. They come later. I don't know about the rest of you. I mean, I really and truly have these moments of lucidity or moments of sheer terror sometimes when things bounce back to me. You know, the memory bubble that'll come up and splash all over your life, and you go like, oh my God, did I really do that? Turns out I did. And it's frightening. And that is where some of those nevers or, you know, maybes really started to come in. And I wasn't always in the midst of studying the big book or working with somebody, or they were working with me. It was one of those things that I think that when we're ready, things recur to us. Things bounce back to us. And it's just like, it's not magic. It's an intuitive part of our life that we now have that we didn't have before. That because we're involved in a program that really champions the idea of helping, eventually things come back to us to help ourselves. And, you know, I have to believe that because there are so many times that things have come to me, and like I said, sometimes they're not so important, but sometimes, I'm telling you, it's sheer terror. I mean, things that, you know, that I put people in harm's way. And, you know, I haven't done it for a long time, but, man, I'm just glad to be here. You know, I said it's an honor and a privilege. It's also, you know, just gratitude for being here based on my lifestyle and what I was doing. And so I'm at a place in recovery where if I have one of these moments now, I have somebody to talk to about it. I don't frequently have them anymore. I think that most things have been cleared up in my life. But I'm never going to take that for granted. I'm never going to say, oh yeah, absolutely, I made my list. It was a true list, and I was willing to do it, and we took care of business. And nope, I think that there's a possibility that I might make an error or two down the road that I would have to do it again. And I'm okay with that, as long as, you know, as long as the person is still around. You know, I was working with a guy one time, this is probably about 10 years ago, and we got to his ninth step, and we were working out of the big book, and I said, well, you know, and by this time I know where his anger, his flashpoints are at, you know, and where some of the places that he needs to make amends at, and we're both aware that I'm aware. And so I said, are you prepared to are you prepared to do the ninth step? Because he can make the list, because the list is kind of practical. But the list doesn't mean anything unless you're going to do something with it, right? It's like the fourth step. It doesn't mean anything unless you're going to do the fifth step. So he makes his list, and I said, okay, what are you going to do with this? He said, I'm not going to do anything with this. I said, well, you know, there's several people on here that are very close to you, that are family members that, well, you know, and he said, F them. I'm not saying I'm sorry to those people. And I said, well, you know what? You're not going to get well unless you do. I said, you're going to know they're there. Those are all your nevers, but let me tell you. And he was willing to make some amends to the people that he actually liked, but family members were not one of them, and in particular his sister, who he had had fighting with since they were infants, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how you can be that mad at somebody after you've grown up, but he was, and he wasn't saying he's sorry to her no matter what. And it extended to a couple other members of the family, and I'm thinking, if this is where I had stopped, I'd be sick. So he stayed sober all these years out of spite. And not only to his sister, but to me, because I told him, you're not going to be able to stay sober unless you do that. So, you know, every January or so, I sent him a coin, and he kind of nanny poo-poos me and said, there, I showed you. I'm still not saying I'm sorry to her. Okay. So he has his nevers, and that's fine. But I wouldn't recommend that. I have my own nevers, or I thought I didn't have any. I had a couple. They're gone now. I got to be honest with you. There's nobody left that I can tell you. Now, I have a tenth step for a reason, right? And we'll go on to that later. But they could easily become eighth and ninth step people too. So I'm trying to avoid that at all costs and use the tenth step the way it's supposed to be used, which, of course, I like to call it, it's an exquisite step, you know, where 8 and 9 are kind of workaday steps where you know what you're getting. They're the guys that are going to bring the lumber, and they're going to bring the hammer, and we're going to make this list. Just be willing to do it, and then we're going to go ahead and check out those folks, and then we're going to see how they are, and we're going to make an amend. So that's kind of eight. I mean, no, I don't know that I can say anything specifically more about it that I was willing. I made the list, and let's move on. Let's go to nine. Let's talk about it. Now, this is a little more involved, obviously. You know, eight I can do without your help. I don't have to have a sponsor looking over my shoulder to say, make your list. But I do need a sponsor at nine, or you need somebody you can trust at nine. My nephew come into the program one time. I had a couple nephews that come in and out regularly, and we're on our way to a meeting. I was just giving them rides. I'm not sponsoring. I'm not doing anything like that. And he says to me, "Well, I had an unfortunate circumstance." And I said, "Well, what is it?" I'm figuring he's going to tell me he drank half of an Ango. And he said, "No, I had an affair." I said, "Oh, well, he was married." And I said, "Well, that's not good." And he said, "No," he said, "it's not. And I think I ought to tell my wife." I said, I don't think you should do that right now. You know, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't come clean or, but this is a harm done to others kind of circumstance. But he wanted to make himself feel better. And so that's the fear, right? He was going to feel great. It was going to break her heart. And so I am not making any light of this, because I'm not. But it just come out of midair. It's like, oh, I think I should apologize to her. I said, I think you ought to shut up. But get a sponsor and have a conversation with them about it. But that's not the only time I've heard it. It's just a story I can tell you that made perfect sense that this step has to be done with somebody besides what's up here. I mean, you're usually behind enemy lines when you're there by yourself. Let's face it, I never made really good decisions when I was using my own way of thinking. You know, people will say, and frequently do, you know, my best thinking got me here. And I had a guy the other day say, well, I thought that was a compliment. Because he's now in AA, you know. Like, he got here all on his own, and he was wonderful about it. He even actually created AA, I guess. I don't know. I said, well, no, that's not really a compliment. Oh, God, he's got an awareness issue, but he's a good guy. And, you know, he's been around a while, so he figured it out. So, lots and lots of times guys want to make themselves feel better. And I get that. I get it. I want to feel better, too. I want my conscience to be clean. I want to be able to hold my head up and walk down the street without somebody whispering about what kind of, you know, bad actor I was, or a character that creates harm for others. And there's a chance that there are things that I'm going to have to hold on to the rest of my life. Because it says wherever possible. And wherever possible is where God's going to put us. Wherever possible. There's an amend that I need to make. And it's a wherever possible. I have the willingness to make it. It's 50 years old. It came way before I was drinking. And just before Leslie quit. But, so it's... right? 50-year-old amends. And I'm telling you, I think that when God sees... my higher power sees that it's necessary, the wherever will come. It has usually been that way with me, and I count on that happening. I'm not going to hold this like it's, like I should flagellate myself because I have this amend to make. It is the willingness that I have from the step 8 to the step 9 that is, you know, that I'm willing to go ahead and do this wherever possible. And honestly, I don't know that it ever will be. But it's not going to be a harm to anybody. I would have told you initially that if I approach this person to do this amend, even though it's many, many years ago, that it may create harm to them. I'll be honest with you, I doubt they remember it. This is something that I've held on to for 50 years. I'm not sure this person has. And if I thought for a minute that it would cause them any harm, I wouldn't do it. But that's what the sponsor's for. This is the conversation that I need to have with somebody that says, yeah, you know, you're really only considering yourself in this regard, and you really probably should put that aside and live with that. I mean, you know, when I think about what I could have been dragging around with me, yeah, I always think about the Christmas story, you know, with Marley carrying these chains around, and he's trying to get Ebenezer Scrooge to make his amends so that he doesn't have to carry these chains into the afterlife. I wondered how big my chain was, you know? And all kidding aside, I wonder what I was carrying around, what kind of baggage was really there that I hadn't given much consideration to, and how much it was really impacting on my behavior going forward. Now, I know that in the end of my drinking, I was suicidal, but that's not new. Lots of people are by the time they get there. You drink yourself into till your house burns down, and so yeah, you got nothing left. So what's the sense of living? Why pursue this anymore? But I didn't get there because of any other reason but my own behaviors. So I had nobody else to blame, but I could find you and blame you if you needed to. And the nice thing about being a really kind of practiced manipulator is that I could make you believe it. I can make you believe it. And those are the kind of people who I needed to make amends to. Those are the people that I needed to ferret out in my fourth step, and say these are the people I had created harms for. The kind of basic manipulation and just disregard for other people's feelings were what I needed to be aware of. I didn't steal anything. Honest to God, I was not a thief. I got caught shoplifting when I was 16 years old. It was such a disappointment to my father, and that I said, I'll never steal anything again. I don't think I can bear the idea of watching my dad being this upset about his son being a thief. And so, I honest to God, I wasn't one of those guys. I didn't owe a lot of money. I was not one of those guys either. But I took time away from people. And I took time away from my kids, and I took time away from my wife, and really was not living a life of any value except for what I was doing. And I could have told you, I'm not hurting anybody. I'm not hurting a soul. And for you to have the nerve and temerity to actually say that I need to quit drinking, you're out of your mind. This is the solution. This isn't the problem. So nine created this kind of uncomfortable status in my life, where I knew that I had to really start looking harder for the people that I need to make amends to. Did I make amends to my children? Yeah, I did that right away. That's one of those nows, you know. And my kids, you know, I'll tell you, this is an absolute truth. My dad didn't drink, and because his dad was, you know, carried the gene, and my dad passed it on. That's his fault, but but he didn't drink. And so probably in my young adulthood and my teenage years, I saw my dad drink too much twice. Well, you know, it's embarrassing, right? I'm in a room full of alcoholics. I got drunk. My kids saw me drunk twice in one day. You know, I needed to make some amends, but I needed them to make sure that they knew that they were real. So it wasn't just saying, I'm really sorry, kids. I'll show up next time. No, I really showed up. I got them to trust me again so that I could be the guy that I should have been from the very beginning, which is devoted to something besides my own selfish needs. Same thing with my wife, who unfortunately said, I don't really care, and please move out. And so I did, you know. By that time, I was wise to the whole idea of, you know, I had done some damage, and a lot of it. And then there's extended, you know, family members. My older brother was a drinking partner with me, but he wasn't an alcoholic. I hated this guy for this, still do. He'd quit in January, so I'm not going to drink until trout season. Now, if you're a trout fisherman, that meant he was quitting on the 1st of January, not drinking again until mid-April. I said, well, that's stupid. Look at all the drinking time you'll miss. And so that's what my family was like. And they were good people, you know, and I loved them. But, you know, in a lot of ways, I really kind of separated myself from my extended family because of my behaviors, because I was not a decent human being. So I think we all find ourselves there. This is why that, you know, we have to get prepared to do this. The list is simple. Making the amend means to me to this day is that if it's just I'm sorry, it's just I'm sorry. But if it's I'm sorry and an extended beyond that. By the way, owing money. One of the things that I always refer to when I'm with guys and they owe people money. This is on page 127. It's on the financial amends. For us, material well-being always followed spiritual progress, never preceded. And I thought, wow, that's a powerful statement, which means that I have to get my house in order, that I have to be spiritually fit, or I'm never going to be able to do the financial amends. Guys that I've sponsored, I've said, listen, you owe a bunch of money, and you need to pay it back. Oh, my parents won't care. I said, I don't give a shit if your parents don't care. Pay them back. If you got $10 a week, pay them back. If they save it all and give it to your children later, so be it. But tell them it's important for your recovery, as it would be for mine and anybody else, to make that financial amend. Laying it off to family members just want me to not get drunk is just another way of getting out. It's just another period of manipulation. It takes us right back to that default setting of being a drunk, and we're not doing a good job. We're not doing the right thing. We're not being honest. Or caring about the people. And when I say that, I mean me. I don't really want to take my problems and make them all yours, but it sounds better. Well, yeah. Well, I like this one too. Listen, I will shut up here in just a minute. Oh, I did want to mention this. You know, there's a story, and I'll conclude here pretty quickly. There's a story that goes around about, and I looked it up and it's almost true, I think, about Dr. Bob and his first day of continuous sobriety. And we all know the story. He met with Bill and Bill kind of just glommed on to Bob's house, went over to his house and lived. I mean, what kind of sponge was this guy? But he's over there. and they're keeping themselves sober, right? And they're trying to get another drunk to join them. And they finally get Bill D. But before that happens, Dr. Bob wants to go to the doctor convention, the AMA convention. I think it was in Atlantic City. He goes and he gets drunk and makes a fool of himself and blacks out and finds himself at his nurse's house with her husband shaking his head, thinking, "You work for this guy." And they call up Ann and Bill, and they come in and said, "Listen, we'll take him home." And they took him home. And then they went into, and this is the part of the story I didn't know before, but I know now. They spend 3 days with Bob, detoxing him with sauerkraut, boy, some other nasty crap that you just, oh my God, I can't even believe that you'd eat it. But if you wanted to stay sober, these are the things you did, right? So he has the surgery. Everybody knows that Bob was a proctologist and he had his surgery and he can now finally keep his hand kind of stable, but before they send him off, Bill gives him a beer. The surgery's early in the morning, and Bill gives him a beer and said, "Here, this will steady your hand." And so he does, he drinks it, and Bob leaves. And then Bob doesn't return. So Bill is beside himself because, you know, he believes that this guy's, he's just started the motor again. It's the phenomenon of craving. He's started the motor and he's responsible because now Bob's going to be out drinking and he's going to have to go back to New York and get another job. And so he's really kind of worried about this whole thing and it goes later in the day and you think, oh, this is not going to be good. And they try to track him down and can't find him. He didn't have a cell on him apparently. He comes wandering up there. He's on Ardmore Avenue. Most of you probably been over to Dr. Bob's place. And he comes up the 12 steps up front and doesn't sneak around back to throw booze up into the back porch or anything. And comes up there and they're just beside themselves. They're absolutely certain he's drunk. And he's not. He's not drunk. And they said, "Bob, where have you been all day? We're nervous. We thought you were drinking." He said, "No." He said, "I was doing what I didn't do before. And that was make amends." So Bob, it's one of my favorite stories. I looked it up, it's true. Bob did what he didn't do, what we all need to do. We need to make that amend. In their case, it was still the 6 steps that they had out of the Oxford group, and it was the restitution, but it needed to be done. It was part of what needed to be done, and Bob recognized this. Now that was June 10th. Maybe not, maybe the 17th, but this June 10th for our purposes of 1935. And Bob didn't have another drink until he died in 1950. So can we underscore the importance of being honest with ourselves, to making the list, and being willing to make amends to those, unless we would have them harmed wherever possible? At the end of this, I think that what we have is reached, you know, I think in the first 3 steps we actually find our higher power, we find our God there. I think at the end of 9 you find some grace in your life. I think that's it. We're granted something besides just a relief of this. We're granted something beyond that. And so I'm going to continue to do this. I'm going to continue to think positively about what amends I need to make. And then next week I will talk to you at length, by the way, we're going to go 2 hours next week, about the 10th step. You can talk about the 10th step a long time. Want me to start? Or you can start right now. I don't think I have anything else, folks. Just one factual thing that I want to make sure that I let you know. That you know that the 6 steps of AA, the original 6 steps of AA, Ebbie Thatcher brought them out. Ebbie Thatcher, he was the guy that got Bill sober through the Oxford group, and I thought, really? Because this guy died drunk, you know. Well, he wasn't, but he hadn't been sober a long time. But that's an interesting little historical tidbit that just shows you how providential it is that we're sitting here tonight when the June 10th of 1935, two guys got together, and we get to talk about it tonight. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. So now we'll open it up for some questions and answers. Who would like to get us started? Who's got a question for Dave?
Nice job, Dave.
Thank you, Doug. Good to see you.
I'm an alcoholic. Good to be here.
Hey, I'm wondering if your definition of the word harmed changed over time, and
yep.
You could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I didn't know what the definition of harm was out of the gate. You know, all the biggies, I can figure that out. You know, I can figure out that if I harmed you, and somehow you had lost something of importance to you, whether, you know. So yeah, but the nuance of the word harm is something that come with time and working with somebody. And working with others. I don't know that how else I define it, except that it's a much more nuanced word to me now than it was early on. But I had to start there, right? We all start someplace, you know. And because this is an evolving process, I needed to do what was practical and what was easy and the low-hanging fruit before I could ever get to the more nuanced part of harm. But it's a great question, Doug. Thank you very much.
Who else has a question?
Thank you. Wonderful as always. Paige Alcoholic.
Right, Paige.
I have found that step 9 can be a very dangerous step, especially for people who try to do it without a sponsor.
Yeah, not a good idea.
Bad choice. Has there ever been a time when you were doing a step 9 with a sponsee when you really weren't quite sure how to handle it?
Yes.
And you had to really think about it or go to somebody else and talk to them about it? Can you share some of those?
Well, here's the thing. Whoever comes into the room might not have the same kind of experience as you have. We're all here for the way we got here. But what they may have done, here's a really graphic thing. They're not graphic, just a little more difficult and complex, I should say. Sponsoring a guy who had a pretty lengthy criminal history. And they want to make amends, and I want him to make amends. But he's unwilling at this point to really lay out those criminal misgivings that he has, or the misdemeanors. I hope they're misdemeanors. So I had to spend some time talking to somebody, because, listen, my background, I was a probation officer, right? I had kind of a law enforcement upbringing when I was younger, you know, and I don't know that, you know, statute of limitations on some of this stuff, and it made me nervous, and so I had to tell him. I said, listen, I don't want to be in a position where I will be the person who is going to harm you. If in fact you need to make these amends, if it's something that is that difficult or for you, then I would advise you to do that. But know full well that the price that you have to pay for this may be more difficult than what you want. That's probably the most difficult thing that I've run up against. I'm not giving a real good answer to that because it's still kind of conflicting to me, because I want this guy to get well, and I think he is much better than he was, but I don't think he's ever going to get as well as he wants to. But like I said about Marley's chain, there are some things that we're going to carry with us through this lifetime, and by the way, tough, that's the way it goes. We created this lifestyle, and I don't know, I'm fairly certain there's no death involved in this, but you know, it's difficult because I'm not real sure where to go with that. So, but thank you. And there's also when there's been lesser things too. You know, that's just an extreme example of what I've faced. But thank you for the question.
Who else has a question?
Jeff, alcoholic.
Hey, Jeff.
There has been talk in the rooms that I've heard. I'm not saying this is the prevailing attitude or if it's correct or not correct, but the talk goes something like, well, you know, if they don't want to accept your amends, your apology, or if they say the hell with you, basically screw them. You're doing this for you, not them. Really kind of cavalier toward these people that I've hurt. Yeah. And I don't like it. And especially because it is basically for me.
It is.
You know?
It is.
And so I'm going to this person that I've hurt, and now I'm imposing on them to revisit the past with me where I did them harm. What, with this kind of attitude that I hear commonly in the rooms? And like I said, that's my position on it. I don't like it.
Well,
and I'm asking you, you know, have you heard a lot of that? Is that kind of the received wisdom being given to sponsees around here? Or what what's your take on it?
I can only speak for myself, Jeff. And as far as wisdom, I'm not sure what that... Here's what I'll tell you. What you're saying is in the big book. What you're saying is we do these amends for ourselves. If we go to make an amend with somebody and they throw us out of the office, as Bill says, then it is our responsibility to not harm any further, and that if they don't want the amend, so be it. Now, I don't think that I've ever been told that, and you cross another subject matter there, because part of the step is when would, you know, unless it would do harm to them or others. And so the second comment you make is that, well, I don't want them to revisit it. Okay. If you think, and your sponsor thinks, that by making an amend here is going to cause them harm, then you don't do it. And that's part of the chain you carry. But as far as it's said in the big book, yeah, the big book's pretty explicit about it. If you make the amend or make the attempt to make the amend, and the person is not willing to accept it, okay. What it says is there's no reason for us to be servile or scraping. We're supposed to make the amend, do the best that we can. If it's refused, it's refused. You give that person the kind of respect that they want in terms of separating from them and not bringing it up again, and let it go. And that's all I can tell you. That's what's written in the book. I don't think there's anything that's intended as cavalier. And I don't know that who you're listening to that says, well, screw it, I'm not going to do it, I don't care what they think. No, that's wrong. You know, we have a responsibility to be kind. And as I'll say next week, and I can hardly wait to get there, we have a code that is love and tolerance of others. And that has to factor into this. And I haven't faced that. I'll be honest with you, Jeff. That's not something that I'm familiar with. But I appreciate your comment. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Zoom? Did somebody on Zoom have a question?
I think Melissa started to say something.
Hi, my name's Melissa. I'm an alcoholic. Hi,
hey.
Dave.
Hi, Melissa.
Oh my God, I just love listening to you. I want to say that. I really do.
Well, thank you.
Ever since I had gotten sober in 2015 and stayed sober for 4.5 years, and then I relapsed, and I've struggled ever since. But I want you to know that there are a core group of people in AA that give me hope. And you're at the top of that list.
It was very kind of you, Melissa.
I heard you talk. There was something you said. I was hoping you were going to go more into it, but you kind of said it and then moved on. You were talking about when I drank I didn't think I was hurting anybody else but myself.
Right.
And that's where I have been in the past 3 years. I always think that if I drink, it's, I'm only, you know, hurting my own liver. It's not like I'm hurting anybody else's liver. That's not possible, you know. And when you mix that in with the amends, I don't know how to move forward. I don't know how to say to myself, okay, I was not emotionally available for my kids when I needed to be, but the past is the past. I don't know how you put the past in the past.
Well, I will tell you, Melissa, you start with step one, and you do that with your sponsor, and then when you feel as though you understand your life is out of control and you're powerless, you can move on to step two. But let's not jump to steps 8 and 9 until we get the first 7 prospects well in control. I appreciate what you're saying. I appreciate what you're saying. But you were harming other people. But moreover, you're harming yourself too, Melissa. And you know I'm supportive of you, and I hope you're okay today. So thanks, and keep coming back, okay?
All right, thank you.
You bet.
All right, thanks, Dave.
Oh, wait a minute. We're going to start with 10 right now.